The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Thanks to First Command for supporting this episode of the MilSpouse Matters podcast. Visit firstcommand.com to learn more about free financial coaching, as well as information about military spouse careers. Welcome to MilSpouse Matters, the podcast dedicated to encouraging military spouses. I'm Jen McDonald, and I was a military spouse for nearly 30 years until my husband's retirement. I'm also now the mom of an active duty son, a longtime writer for the military spouse world, and the author of the book, You Are Not Alone, Encouragement for the Heart of a Military Spouse. I created this podcast to bring you inspiration as you navigate your own military life, which can be amazing while also challenging. Whether you're dealing with a move, deployment, raising military kids, keeping your military marriage strong, or employment issues, we're going to talk about it. Military spouses, we're only stronger together. My goal is to bring you realistic hope and support for your own MilSpouse journey. Hello and welcome to episode 39. This is Jen, and I hope everything is going well for you wherever in the world this finds you listening. And thank you so much for taking your time to join me and listen to this week's episode. So congratulations to Monica and Rebecca, who each won a copy of the book Seasons of My Military Student from episode 37. And many thanks to the authors Stacy Heisman and Amanda Tremios, as well as the team at Elva Risa Publishing, for gifting those copies to this giveaway. Just a reminder, you can find the complete show archive at MilSpouseMatters.com. Just click the podcast tab and you can listen to all past episodes, find all the show notes and resources. And of course, I'd love it if you took a moment to subscribe or share the podcast with someone else that you think might enjoy it. And of course, leave a 5-star review. On my site, you can find some more resources for your military life, including links to my book, You Are Not Alone, Encouragement for the Heart of a Military Spouse. And there's also a free 5-day deployment devotional you can download. And I am looking to be adding some new goodies soon, some resources for military families and list of military kid resources and just some things like that. You can also find the Christian Military Spouses Facebook group. Just do a search on Facebook, answer the questions that pop up, and we will be happy to have you join us. So here's something kind of fun. I will be on the Boy Mom podcast and also the Spouse Angle podcasts this week. So that was a lot of fun. The Boy Mom podcast is by Monica Swanson, and she lives in Hawaii and is a boy mom, and she has the Boy Mom book. And she is the mom of, I believe, 4 boys, and they live in Hawaii. And she is just one of those sweet souls that you would just love to sit down and have a cup of coffee with and kind of pick her brain about parenting. Her kids are all doing great, and she's got kids that are graduated and young adults. And so she has a mission to reach out to other moms of boys, and she asked me to come on and talk about being a military mom. So that was really kind of a lot of fun. The interesting thing was, you know, raising kids in the military, I had to really think back because my kids are all in their 20s and reaching their late 20s, some of them now, and really kind of think about raising kids in the military and what got us through it. And so you might really enjoy that podcast if you are also raising boys or even just kids as a military spouse. So I hope you'll go and find out more about that. And the Spouse Angle podcast is by Natalie Gross, and what she's doing is condensing some news every week for military spouses. So that is a really good resource, and just, yeah, go ahead and pop on over there and take a listen to that and see what you think. I'd love to hear. This week, I'm talking to Lisa Molinari, and she is just a ton of fun and so insightful. We're talking about finding ways of coping and adapting to military life, and I think you're really going to enjoy what she has to share. So here is a little bit about Lisa. Lisa Smith Molinari is an award-winning syndicated humor columnist, a military spouse, mother of three, and the author of the book, The Meat and Potatoes of Life, My True Lit Calm. Her columns appear weekly in Stars and Stripes newspaper and other publications across the U.S. Lisa started writing 10 years ago as a way to cope with stress during deployment and to find the meaning and the humor in the minutiae of modern family life. You can find more about Lisa at Facebook, The Meat and Potatoes of Life, on Instagram as LS Molinari, Twitter, Molinari Writes, and Pinterest, The Meat and Potatoes of Life. And of course, these will all be in the show notes for this episode. So we are talking about her book and how it came to be. It's available for order in hardback and ebook from Barnes & Noble and Amazon, and also can be ordered at militaryfamilybooks.com. So her book was coming out during the COVID-19 shutdowns. Many authors with book publication dates during the shutdown have postponed their book launches, and her planned book tour was significantly affected by this coronavirus crisis. So rather than cancel her May 1st book launch, Lisa created a virtual book launch called It's Almost Dinner Time Tour, and she's been posting short videos, hashtag Bookface Friday photos, and author news on her social media. Information on her virtual book tour events can be found on her site, themeatandpotatoesoflife.com, and you can find out more about her book on the publisher's book page at elvarisa.com. She is giving away two copies of her book, and I will be doing that giveaway on the Mill Spouse Matters Instagram. So let's just jump right into the talk with Lisa Molinari. I think you're really going to enjoy what she has to share. Thanks for listening. Welcome to the show, Lisa. Thank you so much for joining me today as we talk about some of your experiences and ideas for coping with the stresses of military life and helping military spouses stay focused on what's important for their own families. I'm so glad you're joining me.
It's an honor, Jen. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So I know you're putting out a book and lots of exciting stuff going on. But before we get into that, can you tell listeners a little bit about yourself and your family and your background in military life?
Sure. Let me preface this with, I was never nominated for Military Spouse of the Year. I have a very garden variety military spouse background, so it's nothing extraordinary. I married my husband back in 1993. He was, in the Navy for about 5 years at that point. So I was a lawyer. I was working as an attorney in Pittsburgh, a litigator, when I met him. And I just loved the romantic idea of marrying a military guy. And a year after our marriage, I was sitting on a couch in base housing, nursing our first child. So it was a huge turn of events in my life. And that was way back in the early 90s. I actually remember sitting on that couch nursing our son when he was a little guy out in California, living in army housing at the time. And I remember it was the O.J. Simpson trial was on television.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I had little ones during that time too.
Yeah. Right. So I think I watched the entire trial. It made it much more interesting, didn't it? I was like, oh, I get to nurse my baby because the trial's on.
I have to sit here, so may as well watch something.
Right, exactly. So that was way back then. We didn't, I'm not going to get into any kind of competition about how many times we moved or how many times my husband was deployed. We moved, I think, all in all, about 10 or 11 times, and we had three kids. And have lived in he was intelligence. So we lived in a variety of places. He wasn't tied to any one particular part of the country or overseas. We lived overseas twice. It was a huge grand adventure. So, and now we're here. Our kids are all adults, but our youngest is 19, oldest is 25. And, my husband, retired after 5 years on active duty and now has a civilian job, and we're living in Rhode Island.
Wow. Well, I think the whole garden variety life is very relatable because you didn't have to have some huge epic event, but you, you made it work for decades. So you obviously did something right. But I, you know, going back to that young mom on the couch, I think, you know, I got married pretty young, but I was in nursing school and then I was working as a registered nurse. And I remember having that feeling of all of a sudden I was home with little ones and going, what just happened? like it's all good, but right. This is not what, if you had told me that was what I would do with my life, I would have been shocked. And so I think you have a little bit of that experience too.
It was a surprise because I was naive. And when I was practicing law in my 20s, I didn't understand what married life and I didn't know anything about military life. I didn't know what was going to happen. So I had this sort of naive belief that, well, you go to school, you become a lawyer. You went to school, Jen, and you became a nurse. I never thought that I would ever walk away from that. I always thought on some level it would be there. I didn't intend to abandon my legal career, but when, as you go along in life, you get dealt a hand and you have no idea what that hand is going to be. So you can't predict how you're, you know, what you're going to discard and what you're going to pick up. You just have no idea. So, what happened to us that it wasn't just military life that came along, but we had, you know, one of our children had developmental issues. And when we were living in England, out in the middle of nowhere, and he was, my son was three, and I had a newborn at that point. Anna, our middle child, was about 6 months old. And our son hadn't started talking normally yet. And he was doing, you know, he had some other delays. And we took him to the pediatrician at Lakenheath Air Force Base there, and he diagnosed him with autism, and we were devastated. And at that point in my thought process, my legal career became the lowest priority of anything in my life. And it stayed that way, you know, and I was in England anyway. I was overseas. I needed to be there taking care of my kids. That's what my instinct told me. Even without developmental delays, with my son and work to do and therapy to do for him, military life kind of helped me because my instinct was that I wanted to stay home with my kids and I wanted to take care of them. And because of military life, I didn't have that tough choice to make. It was like, oh, we're getting stationed in England. I can't practice law there. Well, I'll stay home and raise my kids. You know, I'm thankful for that. I really am, because I know I probably would have struggled with the choice, you know. But in the end, because of military life making that choice for me, I feel like I did the right thing, and I'm glad I did. I don't have any regrets at all. So that was the reason initially that I didn't even pursue part-time work in my law career. Even when we came back to the States, once I'd stay home with my son and we got him back on his, you know, feet developmentally. And by the way, he ended up losing that diagnosis over the years because we did much therapy, and he's now a software engineer at Raytheon. Went to college, you know, the whole ball of wax, lives on his own, doesn't want me to come over and bother him. You know, he's just a typical 25-year-old. So, but you know, we do have that history that we had, you know, autism in our life for quite a few years. So, but after staying home with him, I sort of thought, I see the benefit in this, and I don't want to rob my other two children, our two daughters, from that experience as well. So I stayed home with them and tried to read my legal supplements and, you know, keep up with it. But even that, after a while, I just said, look, I don't want to split myself in two directions. I want to do this one thing and do it well. What was your experience with that?
I think that's such good advice and so relatable. And I think, like you said, you kind of get forced into making a decision that's best for your family. And I did go through something similar when we first moved away, and I was working a lot, and then we had our first son, and you know, you're not near family or really any support, and you just have this little newborn. And my thing was, I couldn't just leave him with people I didn't know. I just couldn't. And by the time he was turning one of the nurses I used to work with had called me, and she said, you know, the office we're working in, the doctor had agreed we could split a job. Like she was like, you could come in 2 days a week and I could do 3 days a week or whatever would work for you. Mm-hmm. And I had just found out I was pregnant with my second one.
Oh yeah. Right.
It was like the day after Matthew's first birthday. And I said, well, yeah, probably going to have to put that off because I'm pregnant again. And I could just tell she was kind of like, huh.
Yeah.
And then we moved, you know, and I think as the years went on, it's like you said, I kind of had this thought I'd go back. Mm-hmm. Here I am 30 years later and right, I never did go back. But you know, it prepared me because our second son had a lot of breathing issues with asthma, and I was responsible for giving him breathing treatments and doing all these things at home with him. Mm-hmm. And so I always think God just kind of prepares us for things we don't even know are coming. So that's my thought right on it.
And you know, don't you wish yeah that back then when we were making ourselves feel guilty about not attending to our careers, don't you wish that we would have known then what we know now, which is that the better thing to do is just embrace what you're doing, embrace
yeah
that you're staying home. And, you know, I don't want to act like, someone, you know, that someone who decides to go back to work is doing the wrong thing. Like my best friend from high school, she married a guy who's not in the military. They didn't move a lot or anything, and she's a great mom, but she's a landscape architect. And at some point she was like, I can't do this stay at home mom thing. I have to go out and work. I'm a better mom when I go yeah and come home from my job, you know, and she just needed it personally. So I get that, but
It's different for everybody.
Right.
Yeah.
I didn't feel that myself. I had this like burning instinct that I, like you said, I had a fear of having someone else watch my kids. I was one of those annoying first moms who didn't want anybody to hold the baby. You know?
Yeah. I was a little protective and I really did love being at home with them. And then we, you know, just some of those things that snowballed, we ended up homeschooling and making other choices that you couldn't have told me beforehand would have right been part of my life. And that's okay. But I think too, now I have this whole second career, you know, as a writer, as an editor, and now doing this podcast. And it sounds like you kind of worked yourself into just kind of writing mm-hmm about military life as well and kind of pivoted a bit to something that maybe you wouldn't have done before. So how did you start writing about military life? Was it just for yourself or were you kind of putting that out there?
This is a perfect segue between the two topics of staying home and like what you said, where someone gave you an opportunity and then all of a sudden you knew you were pregnant. So what happened was in 2007, my husband announced that he had voluntarily signed up to be an individual augmentee and was going to deploy for more than mm-hmm a year to Djibouti, Africa. And I was done having kids, but we had the three kids. We had the dog, we had the house, we had the yard, the whole thing. And mm-hmm it was, I had just made the decision because our youngest went to kindergarten that I was going to start working again, start, you know,
of course,
rekindling my legal career. And then he announces that he's leaving to be in Africa for a year. And I knew I can't manage all that. I won't be able to do it.
Right.
So I started to, another thing was, and I hope other moms don't put themselves through this, because I spent so much money to earn a legal degree, to earn a law degree and take the bar and all the work that went into it. I had this underlying thing where I thought I had to be super mom because if I wasn't super mom, it just wasn't good enough because there has to be a reason why I would have given up my legal career. So when my husband first went away, his name's Francis, I was really good at it. I took, you know, I was so organized and like, I was like, this isn't so bad, you know, like, you know, everybody told me, oh girl, wait, you're going to be drinking wine at 10 o'clock in the morning. You're going to let the kids wear pajama pants to school. You know, they told me all these things and I thought, you know, they just don't know what they're talking about. I am really good at this and watch me now, you know? And then it was like, I think the seventh month and just everything started to unravel and it started small. It was like we had a dog that dug literally like a World War I trench through our backyard going after a mole. And then, you know, how was I going to refill the trench? You know, the sprinkler system got compromised. I was in a book club and I remember I said something stupid in book club and everybody laughed at me. And that kept me up for about three nights straight. You know, little things like that. Just I knew that I was losing it because it wasn't big things. It wasn't the big stuff that was bothering me. I actually rise to the challenge when it's big stuff.
Right.
It was a lot of little minutia. It was like a million. What is that? Death by a thousand cuts. That's what it was like.
Yes.
It was the little stuff that kept me up. And
I feel that on a spiritual level.
You know,
I
like,
really do.
Oh my God, I went to Bunko and I brought like a cheese dip, and it was like the trendy wife with like the really cool boots brought like some, you know, super cool recipe. And I would just make myself feel horrible about it. And I knew I was losing it. And I was drowning in minutia, like for real. I think I didn't understand anxiety and stuff back then, but I know now looking back that this was some form of probably clinical anxiety that I was starting to go through. And I laugh about it and I make a lot of jokes about it, but that's my coping mechanism.
Yeah.
But how I worked my way out of it without knowing that I probably should have asked a doctor, I started writing. And at first it was just like, I took a yellow legal pad that I had. I always wrote on legal pads because I was used to that from law school. And when I would go to swim lessons with my kids in the wintertime, you know, I'm sitting there in that sweaty, hot YMCA, steamy, you know, chlorinated place. And I would just write essays about parenting, marriage, how I felt about things. And what I found was that when someone is drowning in all these little things, writing is almost like a way of organizing those thoughts, and you can edit out, you know, quote unquote, it's metaphorical, but you edit out of your thought process the things that don't matter or the things that you've decided, oh, well, that's irrational. I'm taking that out. And you whittle it down to the story that makes sense. And all of a sudden, a day where I am just, you know, drowning in minutia and anxiety of worrying over dumb little things like whether or not my teeth are white enough or, you know, it just, you know, just ridiculous things like that. I then could put it on paper and find out and whittle it down to what really mattered. And it's no profound thing. You can even find things that matter in the meaningless, you know, what looks like meaningless things in your day-to-day routine. There's a lot that matters in your day-to-day routine, but it's not what you think it is. And the writing really helped me. You know, today they call it mindfulness, but really what I was doing, it was an exercise in mindfulness. So fast forward a couple of years, my husband came back. We ended up going to Germany. So he left in 2007, came back 2008. We went right to Germany, and I think I was there for a year, and I thought, you know what, this is silly. I should submit those essays that I wrote and see if I could get them published somewhere. And an essay I wrote on marriage, it was a humorous essay about the expectation of marriage that you, when you get engaged, what you expect marriage to be, and then what the very humorous reality of marriage is after 10 years, you know. And I sent these out to several newspapers, and it got picked up by the Washington Post in 2010. So that sort of started it. And I was so naive at the time. I don't even know. It was like an accident that I got it published, you know, but I did. And the Washington Post was kind of a big deal. So I thought naively, oh, well, maybe I can be a writer now. That's what I can do. And you know what it takes, like my learning curve, I basically had to sit down and then teach myself writing after I got published in the Washington Post. So I became a student of it after that and started my own column. I self-syndicated that column. It's called The Meat and Potatoes of Life. I self-syndicated it to a whole bunch of newspapers over the years. Some paid, some didn't. I wrote a lot of bad things. I wrote a lot of things I'm really proud of, but I wrote a weekly column, and it's not easy. It's 700 words a week sounds easy, but there are days that when I would rather chew my own arm off than write those 700 words.
In this unprecedented time in our country, many of us are taking an even closer look at our personal finances. A global pandemic is new to us all, but First Command has experience coaching military families through the most volatile times. There are steps you can take now to organize your financial life, and First Command is ready to help. Visit firstcommand.com/get-started to learn more.
But in 2016, I pitched my column to Stars and Stripes, and I got a contract with Stars and Stripes. So I've been writing for Stars and Stripes, you know, and syndicating the column elsewhere. So that's how it all started.
I love that story. And I think I was really starting to kind of submit my writing around the same time. I think it must have been my oldest was coming into high school, and it's like, what, you know, I had written for a long time too. And I love the thought of mindfulness. I always called it a brain dump. If I could just get it out of my head, even if it was onto a Google Doc or a Word doc, it meant I didn't have to process it anymore. It was a way of processing it. So yeah, I totally, as a writer, totally get that. And then kind of having to learn. And I kept my rejection letters for a long time. I thought, you know, they were kind of, some of them were kind of funny. So it just keeps you humble. But I love your writing voice. And obviously you're really funny in the way you look at life. And so your book is also called The Meat and Potatoes of Life, just like your column, correct?
Yes.
And yeah, if you wanted to describe it in a nutshell, your book, because you're doing this kind of virtual book tour right now, what would you say is like the main theme or focus of your book?
Well, the story that I just told you about becoming overwhelmed during my husband's deployment, that's kind of the setup for the story. And essentially what it's about is an overwhelmed mom, you know, a military mom, but actually any mom could relate to this, who finds herself just drowning in the minutiae of modern family life. There's a lot of nostalgia in the book too, because I describe what it was like growing up and how our parents didn't necessarily have it easier, but they didn't. Modern life and life prior to the internet, basically, if I can just pick a random, you know, dividing line, were so different in so many ways. We were blissfully ignorant of so many things back in those days that today, 24/7, we're getting information, constant information. And for people who can tend to feel overwhelmed, like I was, this is a recipe for disaster. So those people need the coping mechanism to deal with modern life, at modern family life that's got so many details and, you know, minutiae. So the setup is the story that I told you. And then it proceeds on to tell this family's coming of age story from marriage all the way to empty nest. And it's written like a sitcom. It's called The Meat and Potatoes of Life, My True Litcom. So I was told over the years when I was writing, they people would tell me your essays or your columns, they read like a sitcom, and they would compare it to like the Wonder Years or to that sitcom called The Middle. And I would get compared to these sitcoms, and I thought, why not write a book that's like you could binge read it like you'd watch a sitcom, you know? So the book is written in episodes. And those episodes are contained in five seasons, not fall, winter, spring, you know, not those kind of seasons, but seasons like the seasons of a sitcom. And even though each episode tells its own beginning, middle, and end story about some aspect of either military life or just family life, the whole series of episodes tells a story about this family sort of coming of age and how they sort through the minutiae of everyday life. And mostly it's about laughing at the nonsense. It's about, you know, a mom waking up and having this irrational, you know, worry about something. And by the end of the day or by the end of the scene in that episode, they've come to terms with whatever her worry was or whatever that child was doing for the day, and they've laughed about it. Like one of the stories I'll just throw out there, there's one called Pork Chop Envy. And this everything's true
too. That one.
So that's funny. This is absolutely true. My husband's girlfriend, who he knew before me, she cooked with Shake and Bake. And I was like this purist. Like my mom was super snobby about cooking, and she kind of instilled in me that nobody uses Shake and Bake. It's cheating, you know? So somehow, because it was with his stuff, this box of shake and bake like moved with us. Like we went through two PCS moves and the shake and bake was still there. So
that's hilarious.
You know how the spices move and you never know whether You're something right. is inspired. Well, somehow the shake and bake moved with us. And so I found it when we were living in England and I was like, oh, I was like mad. I was, you know, I was like, this is this relic from his old girlfriend. And I thought, I'm going to cook these lousy pork chops with shake and bake and I'm going to show him how bad it is and why he should feel lucky that he has me now. And I cooked these pork chops and, you know, and that was my irrational thought that bothered me all day long. And I was going to wait for him to get home and he was going to have this terrible dinner. Well, it ended up, I followed the directions. Yes. And the pork chops were delicious. It was,
of course,
you know, and I had to sort of just laugh at myself like, this is ridiculous, you know, and not only laugh at myself for making fun of shake and bake, but thinking that there was some connection between my husband and his old girlfriend because we had a box of shake and bake. It's that kind of story that I tell quite often in this book. And the overarching idea is that you have to take life and peel back the layers and get to what matters and what doesn't matter. I love to draw those conclusions from like typical stories about life. And then at the end of the book, it starts with a prologue called The Rise and Fall of Supermom, because I thought I had to be Supermom. And it ends with an epilogue called It Won't Hurt You, Mommy. And it's, I won't tell you the conclusion, but it's wraps everything up and gives it, it's my realization many, many years later about how I saw things and how I created my own coping mechanisms or my way to find those answers that I needed, and how each person kind of has their own coping mechanisms. But, so I wrote the story, even though it's broken into episodes, it's actually one full story, you know, from the beginning to the end.
But I love it that they're kind of in bite-sized pieces. You know, you can sit down and read a couple and laugh or cry or whatever your take is on it. I just think it's a gift to not just military spouses, but to anybody, because it's perspective. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. I think you did a great job.
Thank you.
you're welcome. Well, and I know you and I had talked before we came on about some of the demands military spouses feel, and you touched on that as well. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of us, you know, we come into it, you know, military life will not define me. And you talked about your coping mechanism has been humor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even through your first deployment with all the crazy things going on that were little things, but how overall, if you look back over your life as a military spouse, how have you managed to stay focused on what's important? What do you think really helped you with that? Or what tips would you have?
Well, I would have to say that storytelling in whatever form that took for me was very helpful. Like I said, there's something in me that takes in information and observes the world, but at some point I have to sit down and make sense of it. And I think my way of making sense of it has been humorous storytelling for the most part, or even if it's serious storytelling. And, but each person probably has their, and that was my way of finding perspective. That word that you just used, perspective, is so important because especially as a military spouse, we spend so much time alone. And when you're alone, it's like the demons can get into your head and get everything all mixed up, you know, and you can lose your perspective. If I had to tell others, you know, what to do to sort of help that, it would be to definitely limit social media. It has its uses, but thank God I've always been like 2 years behind, 2 to 4 years behind any trend. So I came into social media late. But once I did come into it, I was like, oh my gosh, this could drive me bananas. You know, like, I could go off the deep end with this amount of competition, you know.
Especially as a young spouse.
Yeah.
I just am so thankful it didn't exist, because it was hard enough.
It was. And then to find out that, you know, there's always, you have to, social media profiles generally are not, you know, they're skewed reality. There are some people who are brutally honest on social media, and that's a lot of fun, actually, you know, but Mm-hmm. But for the most part, you go, why do you go on social media? Because you want, kind of want to brag about something. I do, you know, it's like I go on social media and say, hey, my kid just made it into whatever college, or, you know, that's what we do. And there's nothing wrong with that. But when you take all that in and you're in a vulnerable place, it can make things worse for you. So I would say to limit, definitely limit social media experience and be careful with it. So because you'll see so many people who look like supermom, but you don't know the full story from social media.
That is the truth.
You know, and there's a weird thing, cultural thing in military spouse culture too, that, that I identified years ago. And it was that it's so ironic. Military spouses actually compete for whose life is worse. And that's why when I wanted to tell you the bio, you know, my bio at the beginning, I wanted to say, hey, I'm just garden variety. I never got nominated for military spouse of the year. I, you know, we had a normal amount of moves, you know, we didn't suffer any great hardships because you, I remember going when, especially when we were deployed to Germany and I met all these spouses from different, it was a joint command, you know, so it was meeting Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, Coast Guard, everybody. And everybody had, it was like, the military spouses competed with hardships.
Yeah.
And
it's a strange kind of competition.
It is. And it's like, I mean, and you know what? There's where the humor comes in. I actually brought that up in a speech I did. It was ironically, it was a military spouse of the year appreciation lunch. I wasn't the one getting the award. It was other military spouses, but they asked me to be the keynote speaker for the lunch. And so I made a comedy act of it. And one of the things I told them was, I was this whole idea about how ironic it is that we compete for whose life is more miserable, you know?
Yeah, it's the truth though.
When you really think about it, it's silly. And that
it is.
That is one way that I cope, is that I whittle things down. Humor, I was class clown. Humor's always been something that's important to me. And I've used it as a crutch. I used it in high school as a way to cope with my own insecurity. You know, I use it as a way to cope with anxiety, you know, and so it's my thing. It's not going to be everybody's thing, but it's definitely my thing.
Well, and I think the whole thought of the competition thing, then that can also prevent less experienced spouses from even speaking up that they're having a hard time because they feel like they're going to get punched down. Like, well, it's not as hard as what I went through, or oh my gosh, it's just, you've only moved once, or you've only whatever. And that's, yeah, that's not the kind of conversations we need to have with each other.
Right. It's true. You got it. You have to find perspective, and it can take, you know, I think having friends is really important, but not all social media friends, like real legit friends.
Like in real life. Yes.
Yeah.
Agreed.
And of course you're going to make new friends at each duty station. So you may have friends only for a short time and then you're moving on to others, but even those short friendships can be so helpful. And it's got to be the kind of relationship where you're sitting on the shared base housing patio together on a Thursday night and your hair's a wreck, you know,
right.
Those are the good,
the knock on the back door kind of friends.
Yes. Yeah. Right. You know,
it makes me miss living on base in a way.
Yeah.
Like I was ready to be done with it, but I kind of miss those relationships that were just so part of that life.
Right. And it's got to be, you know, like, look, I've got a block of cheddar cheese and you've got a thing of Ritz crackers. You want to go sit on the back patio for a little while? Those are the helpful ones, not the competitive relationships. Because you can sit and you can talk about reality and sort through it and laugh or cry, you know, whatever it is, it's important to sort through things. Don't just keep going on life full speed. Sit down and reflect. That's, you know, that term mindfulness comes up all the time today. It sounds so zen, new age, but there's something to that. There's something to it. And I think it's actually been around a long time. They've just decided to call it mindfulness now. So writing brings mindfulness for me. It might be other things for other wives, but definitely find your path to that to help you get through the hardships. Yeah.
Yeah. Or exercise or a hobby or like you said, it just, everybody's coping mechanism is going to vary, but I think it's giving yourself permission that you can take time for that.
See, and that's because we've been around a long time. That's another thing that probably younger wives don't know, is that through all those hardships, you know, one thing that you don't realize is that someday you're going to look back and you are going to be really proud of yourself. Just for enduring it. Just for enduring it. And you will become sappy about military life. I will. Right? You get to this point where, I mean, I've put out before to people, oh my gosh, if I hear the national anthem, I always get a little misty. And I didn't do that before. I didn't do that back when the kids were a little younger. But somehow, just having led this life and, you know, really living the concepts of duty and hardship and what it means, you know, to serve your country, even as a military spouse and your part in that, it becomes a badge of honor one day. And it's something that makes, that cuts, or, you know, it hits you deep. And we live right now on this little island, and we're right across from the Navy base. And at night we hear taps coming across the water. And I love it. I love it.
That makes me cry every time I hear it. I can't take it. Yeah.
Well, it's colors, actually, not taps, but it's colors.
Oh. And taps makes me cry.
Yeah. Taps makes me cry too. but just hearing that familiar thing, you know, when we used to live on base and they'd play colors and, you know, you'd all stop. And I remember when we were stationed in Florida and it was Halloween and I'm sitting on the porch, my husband was gone, the base of our base house, and I'm giving out candy. And here are these sweet little kids in their costumes. And all of a sudden taps gets, you know, goes off on the base loudspeaker, and all these little princesses and frogs and superheroes without their parents around them stopped and stood at attention. I'm going to cry just thinking of it. It's, you know, so the point I'm trying to make is that it seems so hard when you're going through it, but honestly, it instills so much pride. You know, after the years pass, you kind of look back in a nostalgic, prideful way.
Yeah. Like, look what I did. Look what we made it through.
Right.
Well, yeah, I agree with all of that. And I think listeners can hear your heart, you know, towards military life for sure. And as we're kind of coming to a close, at the time we're recording this, and, you know, who knows when it's going to end, this whole quarantine and all of that. And then there's the stop move orders. There's families that are kind of stuck in limbo or going through a deployment, and then now the spouse can't come back, or they just don't know what's going to happen. Since, you know, we're both experienced spouses here.
Right.
I was going to give you a minute to maybe give some encouragement to families that are going through a tough time.
Wow.
That's a loaded question.
I know, because, you know, I'm trying to stay on top of the families that are being affected by the, you know, the DOD stop movement orders and it is, I can't imagine, you know, like I said, we didn't lead an extraordinary life. My husband was intel. So when I see some of the stories of what people are having to endure because of, you know, the disruption, being caused by this coronavirus crisis, it's just like, wow, that's incredible. But the one thing to keep in mind is that you are not alone. It feels like a lonely process, but, you know, thousands of military families are going through this, and, you know, history will look back on this. And, you know, people will know what the military went through eventually, hopefully, just, you know, the hardships that were caused by this, but you're not alone. You're going to endure this with other people. You're going to look back. And, you know, I always want to have a funny thing to say about everything, you know, and sometimes tragedy, you don't want to laugh at tragedy. It seems, you know, inappropriate, but honestly, it's, if you endure this, and let's say the DOD stop movement order has affected you, and your family's separated, or you're paying two rents and you're hemorrhaging money right now.
Right.
You know, you're going to get through this. There will be an end. And when it all comes down to it, you're going to look back and you're going to have a really good story to tell, you know, and
isn't that the truth?
And that's my thing. It's storytelling, you know, like you're going to have a great story to tell about what happened to you. And you can laugh at it. You can laugh about the absurdity of it, and you can cry about the hardship of it, but it's all part of life, and everybody has a good story to tell, you know, and it's in them. Sometimes people can't put it to words, And maybe that's the only talent I have, is putting a story to words, because I don't have an extraordinary story in my life, but I know how to put things to words, and I hope that people relate to that. But you still have that story, you have those details, and hopefully it will become a good story for you to tell one day. And that will
add it to your arsenal
itself. Yeah.
It's so true though. And then one day when you're sitting around and you can talk about lasting through the quarantine and what y'all did.
Right.
That's for sure.
Yep.
So as we get to closing, I just want to remind everybody, you can find more information about Lisa's book, The Meat and Potatoes of Life, on the meatandpotatoesoflife.com and also on the publisher's website, Elvarisa. And I will share all these links in the show notes. And then Lisa is kindly giving away a signed copy of her book. It comes out on May 1st, right?
Yes.
So by the time this airs, it'll be out. And then we'll also have a digital copy to give away. So I will host that on Instagram and you guys can just look for it there. So I am just so grateful that you came on. I think you do have an extraordinary life and story. I think you undersell yourself a little bit. You've been through you've been through some stuff, you know?
Well, you know, I think I just know how to spin it. You know what I mean? You know, that's what it is. But hey, that's part of the fun, you know, is spinning your story. And I wanted to add that for those of you who, you know, if the giveaway goes by and you don't get a copy of the book for free, the publisher is running a 50% off ebook promotion.
Nice.
Right now. So go to militaryfamilybooks.com and look for my book, The Meat and Potatoes of Life, My True Litcom. And I think half price brings it to like $5.99 or something like that. So,
and how long will that be running?
It's running until May 31st.
Oh, great. So the whole month of, is it Military Family Appreciation Month? So that's awesome. And you can find her book and the publisher on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Pinterest, and we'll share all of those as well. So did you have anything else to add, Lisa, before we close out?
I just want to say it's been an honor to come on your show. I've never done a podcast before, so this is my first
well,
one.
You did great.
And it was like sitting around in the driveway with that block of cheddar cheese and Ritz crackers. It was fun.
I'm glad. It is a lot of fun. I think listeners, you guys are really going to enjoy her writing. So go look it up. And I'm so glad you came on and shared your perspective and about what you're doing. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, Jen.
So everybody, wherever in the world this finds you, I know you got out a lot out of today's topic. So just go to the show notes and find out more and look for that giveaway in the discounted book in the month of May 2020. And I hope you're staying safe wherever you are. Thanks so much for listening today. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Mill Spouse Matters podcast. Connect with me at millspousematters.com or on social media as @MillSpouseMatters. You can find my book, You Are Not Alone, Encouragement for the Heart of a Military Spouse, on Amazon and other booksellers. Love the show? Please leave a 5-star review in whatever podcast player you're listening, and then share it with someone else who could use it too. Until next time, have a great week.
And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
That doesn't sound good.
Paper shredder's jammed, but I think I fixed it.
Oh, well, try shredding these $50 bills then.
Seems like it's working.
Better try another $400.
Instead of using money, use regular paper. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.